Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, April 26th, 2023. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Addio A. Jr. Joining me is the LaCroix Poppy himself, a.k.a. the second best baby blues in San Francisco, a.k.a. my fellow Forbes 30 under 30, Tim Ma Ryan Geddes.
It's Greg Miller's birthday eve, Bless. His last day of being 39.
The is
last
that why day people are 30? In chat saying Hail Satan?
That's probably
more than one person in chat is saying Hail Satan. Yeah. I didn't think about the fact that Greg's birthday is indeed tomorrow.
Yeah. Right before the show went live, Bless looks over at the chat and he sees someone say, wow, it's a wild news day. And then the follow up was just Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Which I don't understand where the source of this, but yeah, Greg Miller's probably involved.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Tim, one thing I appreciate about this show is that we have no dress code. And so some days I'll show up in like a bomber jacket or a leather jacket or like a jean jacket. And then other days I show up in a sweatshirt and I never know what you're going to show up in.
Yeah.
But I always know it's going to be fresh. And so I like the dynamic of me wearing a really comfy sweatshirt and you showing up with a leather jacket and a silver chain on.
But the thing is with the comfy sweatshirt, it looks comfy, but it also looks premium.
Like there's something,
it's a
this
color choice
that
I feel exactly. I feel like the choice of color elevates it from just being a hoodie to being a fashion choice. I wouldn't
wear this when I'm just slouching around at home.
I really like your shirt too, Tim. Whenever you wear it, it makes me think that you're trying to be a pirate.
I am a little French pirate with a baguette.
French.
I look like a mime.
Oh,
I'm not good at it.
I see what you're gonna do. Oh, sacre bleu. That's my French laugh right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what I did this weekend, Tim?
Mm.
I watched a movie. That movie? Tetris.
Fuck yeah, you did. What'd you think?
I love that movie. I don't know if I would say it's a fantastic movie, but it is very entertaining. And I couldn't help but to like purely be entertained just by the fact that it's based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many parts where I'm like, that didn't happen that way. Ain't no way that you looped the president of Nintendo into these shenanigans that you're talking about. I do not believe this, but I do believe like, or I do appreciate how much of the movie, the amount of the movie that is purely just contract negotiation.
Dude, it's fucking awesome. Yeah.
It's so engaging.
I think I'm with you that like, I don't think it's like the best movie ever, but I do think it's great. Like, I think that it's a really good movie and it's entertaining as hell. And the fact that it's weirdly a slow burn, but like even in the slow parts rewards you. Like I'm all about it, man. I thought that it was a fun as hell time. And like some of the twists and turns, you're just like, how did we get here? And the music across the entire thing. Inspired.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, I mean, you know what? Whatever. Not gonna get into some things.
Oh yeah, we'll talk about that more later. Mm-hmm. Possibly, maybe. I don't know how that works, but
it's been a while.
I might just talk about Tetris just throughout the year, just because I'm really into that movie. But Tim, of course, Tetris is all about contract negotiations, who can get the rights to what, right? And that's also what Kinda Funny Games Daily is all about. Today's stories include a Zelda Tears of the Kingdom preview roundup, Xbox's Activision Blizzard acquisition has been blocked in the UK, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, head to kindoffunny.com/KFGD to write in with your questions, squad ups, and more. And remember, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames is where you can go to get the show ad-free plus a bevy of bonus content. Housekeeping for you, a new Kinda Funny Games cast is up right now, and it's our review of Star Wars Jedi Survivor. That is up over on youtube.com slash Kind of Funny Games, and it is a much must watch. Of course, Greg Miller is our lead reviewer there, but we also have the one and only Barrett Courtney on there as our Star Wars, our resident Star Wars expert, to weigh in with his thoughts on the game as well. So go check that out.
If you want to deep dive. There too.
Me, you, and Andy were there. Yeah, we were there
all,
too.
All three of us have played at that point about 10 hours. Yeah. So we
all of us are at least halfway there. Through the game, but of course, Greg did finish the game and Barrett finished the game too, and so they share their full thoughts, and us three share our developing thoughts as we go. And we'll share even more thoughts.
Great episode. I really like so that too. Episode of Gamescast because I feel like it represented a lot of different viewpoints, which is, I think, rare for us at Kind of Funny. I feel like a lot of the times we either are in kind of the same wavelength, maybe there'll be like one outlier about something, or a game is for one person, but it's not for others. So it kind of like creates that type of siloed conversation. I feel like with Survivor, all of us had opinions. And I feel like about almost every element of the game, we didn't necessarily agree. And I thought that was a pretty interesting time for us.
It was definitely a spectrum of opinions. And I think, our differences of opinions bounced off each other well to kind of paint a good picture of what you can expect out of Jedi Survivor. But we'll talk about that more later because one of our stories is, of course, going to be your review roundup. But for now, let me tell you about tomorrow and how tomorrow is going to be a fun day because we're celebrating Greg's 40th birthday. That means that we're doing an all-day stream starting with KFGD with me and WWE superstar Xavier Woods, and then following that is a bunch of games and shenanigans featuring Greg, Xavier, Poe, and more, and that is happening tomorrow right here on Twitch and YouTube.
It's going to be one worth moving schedules around to be there for. I've heard some of the plans that they have, and I'm like, I don't know how all these things are going to connect, but it's going to be beautiful chaos, and Austin's going to be there, and Austin's one of my favorite people on the entire planet.
Over Greg on Patreon, we got a brand new episode of Kind of Feudy that is up. And for today's topic, we're going back to video games. So if you missed the video games Kind of Feudy, we got one for you here. And then remember, only on YouTube and the live stream, there's going to be a 30-minute post-show where Snowek Mike comes in to talk to us, KFGD hosts, about your YouTube Super Chat questions. Stay tuned after today's handshake to hang out with us before the next Kind of Funny stream starts. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Tripod Plus Plus and Delaney Twining. Today we're brought to you by Rocket Money, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today.
A Baker's Dozen.
Starting with our number one. Tim, This morning I woke up. Now, let me start with last night. Last night I went to sleep, and I was like, tomorrow's going to be a pretty easy games daily. Jedi Survivor reviews are going to pop.
Done.
That's probably going to be the thing. We're going to talk more about that. It's going to be easy. I woke up this morning. I looked at my phone, and boom, there it is. Microsoft has been blocked in the UK. Mm. And I was like, oh, snap. All right, we got a news story. And then I kept scrolling some more, and I was like, wait a second.
What are these screenshots?
People are giving me their opinions on the Zelda game? What? Wait, there's a preview. Mm-hmm. A preview embargo that's gone up from all my favorite outlets, except for Kind of Funny for some reason, but I digress. Let's get into a preview roundup. Let's talk about some Zelda. We're going to start off with Brian Altano at IGN. This is what Brian has to say about it. What truly caught me off guard with my time playing Tears of the Kingdom wasn't just how much there was to do, and there were certainly tons. It was just how much creative freedom I had as I attempted to take on every corner of it so far. Breath of the Wild's core philosophy was effectively, see that landmark in the distance? You can walk there. In Tears of the Kingdom, it's more like, see that landmark in the distance? Well, you have 100 different ways to get there, and a lot of them might not work. But when one does, oh boy, you're going to feel like a genius. Floating high above Hyrule are the Sky Islands, and that's where the large majority... What was that?
Skylands.
The Skylands, yeah, that's what they could have called them, but they decided not to. Probably a good decision. Skylands? That's what you came up with, Tim? Skylands.
I'm sticking with it, y'all.
All right. Well, there you go. And that's where the large majority of my preview of Tears of the Kingdom took place. If the Hyrule below is the updated open world from Breath of the Wild, the sky sections feel more akin to the Wind Waker, just minus the big red talking boat to get around. I've not played a Wind Waker. I didn't know that the boat talked to you.
Oh, yeah. King of true? Red King, Lions? Dude.
Show some fucking my respect fucking to the royalty, boy? Bless.
Daphne's no Hanson Hyrule. You're gonna fucking put disrespect on him? The best companion in the fucking Zelda series, blessing?
He's making some really
get
solid
out of
points,
my
dude.
Fucking set.
You're just saying words. Those weren't real
words.
Things.
They're quality words, everybody.
Those weren't real
quality
things.
Quality
words.
Words like Skylands. Someone in the chat. No, you're
not
Sky Rule.
You're not gonna make Skylands.
Sky
happen.
Rule.
Skylands
bless.
Is not gonna happen. All right. Skylands is not Streets Ahead. There are tons and tons of islands up there in disparate clusters and formations, and it's up to you to figure out exactly how you're going to travel between them, take on their endless puzzles, conflicts, and caves, and move on to the next one. jumping out of Brian's preview, I'm going to jump into Charles's preview over at The Verge. This is Charles Pulliam Moore. Once you start really using Link's new abilities to interact with the things around him, the monsters, the weapons, the bushes full of bomb flowers, Tears of the Kingdom reveals itself to be much more technically complex and imaginative than its predecessor, which is saying something. At first, some of the new runes seem like souped-up versions of classics like Stasis and Magnesis, but unlike Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom actively encourages you to not only just use each of Link's new powers with a surprising frequency, but also to think about all the different ways you could potentially deploy them to solve puzzles and slay monsters. That is The Verge's preview. From there, I have a collection of tweets that I've screenshotted to give you, a sky view. A Skyland view down.
Thank you. Thank you.
A lot of the opinions on the internet, right? SkillUp tweeted this out when he posted his video. Even in this tiny window, The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom offers up one of the most flexible, responsive, and creative sandboxes I've experienced in a video game, and I cannot imagine what the full experience has in store for us. Steven Totillo from Axios tweeted out, I recently played The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom for an hour. Super fun. It's a Zelda for tinkerers, a Link for the TikTok/Minecraft age. It's cool, if a bit much to control. A return to Zelda complexity, a Majora's to Breath of the Wild's Ocarina. And then Gene Park posted that he has played 70 minutes of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. It might be bigger than even Elden Ring. Something really special is on our way. He follows that up by saying, one thing about Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, it is not easy to control. The game is packed with so many features. Even 70 minutes wasn't enough to get used to the buttons. This plays vastly different from Breath of the Wild. And then he finishes by saying, Dungeons in Zelda? I solved a puzzle and opened the entrance to one in the sky. Nintendo said, do not enter. I can see inside, and it looks mysterious and unlike anything in Breath of the Wild. But the true nature of dungeon design is still an unknown to us.
That might be my favorite tweet about this so far. I love Gene, the idea of him like Zelda's trying, or Link trying to look in there and be like,
he's like, what's that?
A dungeon. That's a dungeon. I know what a dungeon looks like. That, my friend, is a dungeon.
And Miyamoto's looking back at him, just shaking his head like,
do not enter.
No, I don't know what that is. Don't go in there, though. I don't know what that is. Don't go in there.
Dude, this is exciting. I will say a lot of what they're talking about makes this sound even more like an anti-Tim Geddes game. Mm-hmm. The amount of tinkering. Tim, not a tinkerer.
Yeah.
No, that's not usually my cup of tea. But again, like I've said a million times, Breath of the Wild challenged me to go outside of my comfort zone with genre. And I loved it. So I'm hoping that that happens here as well. But I do wonder if there was a breaking point for me personally of it going too far into it just being a sandbox, as opposed to, like, I usually like a bit more linear of an experience. So these previews right now, I will say, not making me more excited. But mm-hmm. then again, I don't know how much more excited I could have got after that last trailer.
I'm actually right there with you. I'm somebody who, y'all know, I fucking love Breath of the Wild. And one of the things I love most about Breath of the Wild was the fact that it was the sandbox that I could explore and do whatever with, right, and experiment with how different elements play around with each other. I went and I watched SkillUp's full preview, and I also watched like Giant Bombs and Game Explains, and just I consumed all of it, right? I was very fascinated with what they had to say. And SkillUp's preview, he mentioned specifically that it felt almost like playing more of a survival game than something that is an open world action game, that I thought was really interesting. And he compared it to the idea of, oh yeah, I have all these elements I can play around with, right? I can interact with feasibly anything here and fuse and combine different things. I can make different structures, and you feel it feels like you're almost tinkering more than you're playing compared to Breath of the Wild, right? You're doing a lot of experimenting, combining things, and I found that fascinating. And I'm leaning towards your side of, man, okay, that doesn't sound like my kind of game. I'm not somebody who plays survival games at all, really. I think if there was one game to get me into that kind of game, it would be Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
The untitled sequel to Breath of the Wild, yes.
Exactly. And, you know, on top of that, what everybody had in common in the previews was that everybody was very impressed with the lengths you can go to craft and create things. And for me, that has me excited, right? It's the idea of, while watching Dan Reichert's preview on Giant Bomb, he created like this flying contraption that was like this metal slab that he had, and he put on like five rockets toward the back of it, and then he puts like a balloon on top of it for floating, and then he puts a fan towards the back of it, and then he like places down a steering wheel and he starts flying it all over the place, and I'm like, dude, this is awesome. Like, this is really
like,
cool.
That worked.
It worked the way he wanted it to work. It seemed very intuitive. And it seemed like it wasn't complicated, which is my biggest fear about it.
Yeah.
I don't want to get lost in the weeds with the crafting stuff. I do want to explore and find the dungeons or shrines or whatever you have. I want to have that cool feeling of exploration and discovery, because that's what I love most about Breath of the Wild. It seems like that's going to be combined with just a lot of tinkering and a lot of crafting.
Yeah, and with that, something that came up a couple times here is the complexity of the controls, which is interesting, and it makes sense, right, for the amount of things they're offering in this game, like just to be able to actually control combining all those things as well as driving those things, I guess would be the word, piloting those things. Like there's going to be a lot. I wonder how crab hands we're going to get with this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, one of the, I believe it was Giant Bomb that was talking about how once you place the steering wheel on the contraptions you're controlling, it starts to feel way more natural. Like, that is the key to making it, to, like, turning your contraption into, like, an actual thing. Once, I believe it was, like, once they started controlling it, all of the things went on at once, right? Like, if you place a rocket onto the slab and you hit the rocket, that'll activate the rocket. But if you want everything to work in tandem with each other, you place down that lever, you start controlling it, and it all just works in one. And so, like, yeah, like, it's something that I'm at the place where I'm just like, I need to play the game. I need to have this in my hand. I need to know how this feels in motion, because it's so weird listening to other people describe it, and it feeling complicated, it feeling like it's getting into the weeds, but also they're talking about it with excitement. They're talking about it like they were into it the whole time. And I'm like, okay, cool. Well, that's a good sign. Yeah. It's a good sign that you got into the weeds and you're like, no, but these weeds are fun to be in.
Hey, I mean, that's huge, right? Something I'm very interested in is what the point of the building is, because what we've seen in the trailers, which granted has just been like a lot of little glimpses, so it seems like for the most part you're either building a weapon or you're building a vehicle of some sort. I right now, as a simp, I'm just a normal man. I'm just
a normal man.
All right. The idea
you also called yourself a simp just now. you said as a simp, as a normal man.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. You know what? Hey,
I just want to call that before people in chat call that out.
Definitely don't clip that out.
Don't clip that out.
You fucking coward. Jesus.
Corey, we'll need a gif of that, please.
I'm interested in, I can't come up in my mind with too many interesting use cases for giant vehicles in this game. Besides, okay, getting from one place to another place. But once I have something I'd want it, this is the best way to do that. I'm just going to do that. But it's Nintendo. And it's the Zelda team. So, like, I'm sure that, again, I'm just a simple man.
Yeah.
I'm just an innocent, normal man. I'm a simp sometimes, all right?
I mean, fair
Nintendo,
enough.
For Nintendo, it happens, plus. Mm-hmm. I'm the best of us. I'm sure that they're going to come up with some stuff that we're like, what the fuck? Like, only you could think of this shit.
Yeah. What also has me excited is going back to the Gene Park thing of these previews, we're only able to touch on a slice of the game, right? They're playing only 1 hour, right? You imagine that they're very early on, and that the point of that hour was to get you familiarized with the tools at your disposal. Gene might have seen a dungeon, right? Like, we don't know much about what's going on with the shrines, the lack of shrines, what's replacing the shrines. We don't know what's going on with narrative aside from Ganon's been drinking water and now he's Ganondorf and he's looking all sexy. Like, we don't know much about what's going on in the world of Hyrule now. And I love that there's still so much out there that we don't know, right? And like, cool, they're showing off this new stuff. What don't we know? That is still the stuff that excites me, because I feel like they're playing that stuff very close to the chest. And I'm hoping that I pick up this game and within the first few hours, I'm like, wow, this is unlike anything I would have imagined that they had in store. Yeah. This is way different from what I expected. Which I still have that expectation, which is a crazy expectation.
Very lofty, but it's an expectation that I feel it has been properly set up. And I think they have the confidence that it'll be met. Mm-hmm. But we won't have to wait long to see Bless. It's April 26th right now.
We're only a few weeks away.
That's wild. We'll all be playing Zelda in just a couple weeks.
I cannot wait. Woo. I will say one more thing in terms of a concern after the previews.
Oh.
I've seen a lot of the previews. I've seen like half the previews be like, played it. Performance seems fine. I'm not seeing that many stutters, all that stuff. I've seen like the other half of the previews be like, no, I'm seeing places
the
where
technical
this
side
the technical
issue.
Side of it.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I've seen, I'd say about 50-50 of the people being like, oh, it's great. And people being like, no, there's a problem here. But I feel like a lot of those people also were stating that this feels a lot more advanced than Breath of the Wild technically.
Yes.
I think it was Arthur Geese that was saying that the Breath of the Wild very much felt like a Wii U port, whereas this feels more like a Switch game. And like the difference there isn't that vast, but there is one.
Yeah. I saw some people saying that, yeah, this game looks a little bit sharper than Breath of the Wild, which I'd say is huge. But we won't have to wait too long to see.
We won't.
Around the corner. Story number two. Xbox's Activision Blizzard deal has been blocked by the CMA. This is Ryan Dinsdale at IGN. The UK government's Competition and Markets Authority has moved to prevent Xbox's acquisition of Activision Blizzard. Announced on the government's website, the decision to block the deal was due to the implications for cloud gaming. Quote, the deal would alter the future of the fast-growing cloud gaming market, leading to reduced innovation and less choice for UK gamers over the years to come, the CMA said. Microsoft has retaliated by saying it'll appeal the decision, saying it is disappointed by the result that appears to reflect a flawed understanding of this market. Brad Smith, vice chair and president of Microsoft, said, quote, we remain fully committed to this acquisition and will appeal. The CMA's decision rejects a pragmatic path to address competition concerns and discourages technology innovation and investment in the United Kingdom. We have already signed contracts to make Activision Blizzard's popular games available on 150 million more devices, and we remain committed to reinforcing these agreements through regulatory remedies. We're especially disappointed after lengthy deliberations, this decision appears to reflect a flawed understanding of this market and the way relevant cloud technology actually works, end quote. Activision Blizzard CEO Bobby Kotick said in an open letter to staff that while the CMA's decision to block the deal wasn't good news for the companies, it is far from the final word.
Can we make it the final word sometime soon, please?
Kotick vowed to join Microsoft in contesting the decision and said it has already begun the work to appeal it in the UK Competition Appeals Tribunal. Quote, we're confident in our case because the facts are on our side. This deal is good for competition, end quote. Microsoft's acquisition of Activision Blizzard may have reached its conclusion in the UK, and even if it's appealed successfully, the deal is still being investigated and debated elsewhere. The European Union has reportedly hit Microsoft with a formal antitrust warning, and the United States Federal Trade Commission also sued to block the acquisition with a trial set later for this year. It's also faced scrutiny from various U.S. senators, the city of New York, and the U.S. Justice Department, though Spencer has remained confident about the deal throughout.
So here we are on April 26, 2023, still talking about this. But this is a real move. This is a step forward.
This is a big update.
Step backward? Step sideways? Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure, but it's a step, right? I am honestly very surprised to wake up to this version of this news today. Because from everything we've seen for the last couple months, it seemed like there's been some issues, but Xbox and Microsoft have figured them out and been rectifying and, you know, doing the little world tour of getting all the ducks in a row here. And last week, there was various financial outlets reporting like the deal is close to being signed and it's going to go through. So it's one of those things where those are pundits on the financial side of things that really know this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's usually when they say that type of stuff, it happens the way that they predict. So for this to happen here, I am surprised.
Yeah, this is the first time where I'm like, oh, this might not actually happen. Like, Microsoft might not actually get Activision Blizzard. Up until now, I've been convinced that it's going to take deals, and that still might happen, right? Like, if this appeal goes through and they're able to find success with that, I imagine the move now would be to, all right, in the way that we've been signing all these 10-year deals with Nintendo and trying to make that happen with PlayStation and all these other things, they're going to find more cloud platforms, if they're out there, I guess, sign more deals with. They might just have to be like, cool, we're going to hunt down every cloud platform on the planet and sign a 10-year deal to make that go through.
So, I mean, and
I'm also shocked that cloud is what this came down to.
I know, me too. But that's the type of scrap we're talking about here, right? Where it's just like trying to nitpick and trying to find the way in to be able to block this. So where aren't they right now in terms of cloud?
Oh, where have they not signed deals?
Yeah.
I could not tell you.
Yeah. Chad, help me out here if you have a good answer. Because I do wonder, like, where – because there has to be that line of Xbox starts doing the things that they didn't want to do, but through the power negotiation, they kind of were forced to compromise. Because there is a reality at some point where, not so much in the cloud sense, but at what point does Game Pass end up on Switch or end up on PlayStation?
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I know that is like big leaps, but yo, we're talking about.
I mean, I think that's what they want.
Anything can happen, right? But yeah, that is the thing. I wonder, do they want Game Pass on PlayStation? Probably.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know? Like, Xbox is more about the platform than about the hardware, and so wherever they can put Xbox Game Pass, the better, right? Because that's going to mean like they're still going to make money off of Xbox Game Pass, whether it's on Switch or PlayStation. Switch and PlayStation would also make money off of that. Would be the whole thing, right? Yeah. Which I think Xbox would be fine with, but I think PlayStation's like, no, fuck that. We have PS Plus. We have our own platform. You're our competition. We're not going to let you in the door. Like, that is not what this is about.
Just like Nintendo in the dungeons.
Just like Nintendo. Exactly. Just like Miyamoto standing behind Dan or Gene Park and being like, no, I don't know what that is. Don't go in there. That's PlayStation with Xbox.
Bill Spencer's like,
what's going on in there? What's going on in the PlayStation dungeons? But yeah, like I'm very curious on what on the links they have to go to, right? Like, just like you're saying, what are the other cloud platforms that they have to make deals with? Do they have to make bigger and better deals with the platforms they've already made deals with, right? Mm-hmm. Does it go from 10 years to 20 years? Does that even make sense anymore? Like, can you think about 20 years in the future when it comes to video games? I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Like, you know, I can't think, we don't know every deal. We don't know the details of every deal, but there aren't many long, I mean, 10 years already, I feel like, is very long for a video game deal of any sort. The longest thing I can remember is back in the day, Tony Hawk signed a 13-year deal for those games. And that was like, wow, that is like ridiculous, like unprecedented. Whereas like things like the Star Wars EA deal was like just a couple years, right?
No, I think that might have been 10 years.
Was it 10? God, 10.
It was a longer. Yeah. Because I remember talking about that in like 2014, 2013 or something like that. And I forget if they ended that deal earlier.
Yeah, well, yeah, there was like the weird, eventually they made a new version of the deal. But yeah, man, this is where we're at, I guess, right? Like, there's not too much to say that we haven't already said a million times about this. I am very surprised that it didn't go through. I still think it will. And I still think that this, unfortunately, is just going to get drawn out even longer.
On that note, I want to bring in a question from Nano, who writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, hey, y'all, with the CMA officially blocking the Activision Blizzard deal, do you see this as the end of this year's long news? I mean, to me, this feels more like a setback than a complete shutdown with Activision and Xbox immediately appealing the decision. With your vast legal knowledge of UK laws, do you eventually see the ruling get overturned? I mean, I think there's a good chance it gets overturned. I think there's a good chance that it doesn't. I think even if it does get overturned, if they appeal it and they're like, no, okay, we're after reevaluating, you're cool with the CMA. I still go back to the bottom of the article where they talk about all the other obstacles they have, right? You're talking about the FTC. You're talking about the European Union. You're talking about a bunch of countries you have to go through. And I am stressed reading about it, right? I like putting myself in the shoes of like Phil Spencer and the people at Microsoft and Activision who are trying to make this deal happen. I get stressed because I'm like, dude, you have to make sure that you're good with all of these people.
Good with them and also not fucking yourselves.
Yeah.
For your future. Like, you can't promise things that are going to long term not be good for your own business, but sometimes those are the things that need to be said or done at a certain time. So there's a lot at stake here. And I think that there's the other side. To answer the question, I think that there's an 80% chance this goes through. Mm-hmm. I think that there's still a 20% chance it doesn't at the end of the day, but I think that it is more likely than not by a large margin. I also think that if it doesn't, and even if it does, but if it doesn't, like, this is going to have ramifications across Microsoft and across Xbox because of the amount of time and effort put into this, the amount of decisions that had to be made and things that had to be said. Like, this could result in a lot of bad things for
people. If at the end of the day, Xbox isn't able to acquire Activision Blizzard after investing so much into this, that's not going to be good. That's going to be bad. I don't know what those ramifications look like, but it's not going to be great for Xbox. Of course, that doesn't mean Xbox goes away or anything like that extreme, but I do think that totally redefines what Xbox's plan is, right? Like, what does that look like in terms of, like, are you still doing, putting all your eggs in the Game Pass, right? When Activision was, like, that trump card that you had, now that that's gone, do you reevaluate that? Do you reevaluate, like, who you're having develop what? Did you already start to make plans in terms of Activision Studios taking these things over? Did you think about Crash and like Crash? Did you think about like other Activision IP? Did you think about? I don't know why Crash was the first one to come to mind, but sure.
Yeah.
Were you planning and thinking about other Activision IP and how to like spread those out and what to do with those? Like, how much of your strategy is hinged on Activision Blizzard? And now that might not happen, what becomes the strategy in terms of how you're going to become the market leader? Who knows? I'm also convinced that like they're rattled over there. At least at Activision, they're rattled. I don't know if you saw the email from. I got an email from Activision about this, like a representative of Activision with a media statement.
I don't think so.
So in my email, this comes in, and they say it's an official media statement, and so I'm on the clear to read this. And this is from somebody who represents Activision. It says the CMA's report contradicts the ambitions of the UK to become an attractive country to build technology businesses. We will work aggressively with Microsoft to reverse this on appeal. The report's conclusion are a disservice to UK citizens who face increasingly dire economic prospects. We will reassess our growth plans for the UK global innovators, large and small. We'll take note that, despite all its rhetoric, the UK is clearly closed for business. They're throwing haymakers from like Activision at the UK's regulatory people. That's wild. Like, I've never read anything like this in my email before. Yeah, I'm like, shit.
Yeah, originally it was just like, the top dogs of PlayStation and Xbox that we were joking about, like the boxing match. But now it's like, no, they're going after the UK, baby.
Yeah, we're going after a nation.
Worldwide.
Jesus.
Yeah, man, this, I'm tired of talking about this, but we're going to have to continue to because it is going to keep going. I think this is drawn out, another 6 months?
Maybe another 2 years, Tim. Here's the thing, right? I'm as tired as I am, I'm also thoroughly entertained just by like statements like that, where I'm like, dude, this is juicy, man.
This
takes me back to like watching like a political drama. This takes me back to watching Tetris, the movie, Tim.
Yeah,
where all of it is just deals and contract negotiations, but like they get into the weeds in that shit, and that shit is sometimes very riveting to watch and follow.
There's a lot of succession shit going on here, and like with big acquisitions and stuff, when there's losers. There's always losers, and even if the acquisition doesn't go through, man, like, people are going to lose their jobs. Potentially a lot of people.
Tim, before we move on to story number 3, I want to let people out there know about patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Over on Patreon, you can go and get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
Shout out to Rocket Money for sponsoring this episode. We all love gobbling up content, and we have an understanding of what subscriptions we use. Or do we? Do you know how much your subscriptions really cost? Most Americans think they spend around $80 a month on subscriptions when the actual total is closer to $200. That's right. You out there. You could be wasting hundreds of dollars each month on subscriptions you don't even know about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending and it helps you lower your bills, all in one place. Rocket Money has saved some of us here at Kinda Funny a ton of money, and it can help you too. Stop throwing away your money. Cancel unwanted subscriptions and manage your expenses the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. That's rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny.
Story number 3, Tim. Let's lift our spirits with a Star Wars Jedi Survivor review roundup. Right now on Metacritic, Jedi Survivor is sitting at an 87. On OpenCritic, it's sitting at an 86. Let's start off with Dean Stapleton and IGN, who gave it a 9 out of 10 and says, Star Wars Jedi Survivor takes what Fallen Order achieved and wall runs with it, then double jumps and air dashes straight into an epic lightsaber battle. Rather than taking us back to square one to begin Cal's journey as a Padawan again, we're trusted with control of a full-fledged Jedi Knight who we can grow into a master of superhuman mobility and fantastic and challenging combat. With a new set of larger, more diverse, and densely packed worlds to explore, and a memorable cast of returning characters, Survivor tells a story that may be predictable, but is still fun and at times emotional to watch play out. Launch performance issues aside, it's a sequel that does virtually everything better than the original, which was already an exceptional Star Wars game. If Respawn makes one more like this, it'll complete the best Star Wars trilogy in 30 years, hands down. Jordan May at GameSpot gave it an 8 out of 10 and says, Star Wars Jedi Survivor improves upon its predecessor's gameplay and storytelling to deliver an engrossing story of a Jedi grappling with morality. On a final note, Survivor's technical performance is a stumbling block that must be noted. Playing on Xbox Series X, I experienced random crashes on a number of occasions, all annoyingly during cutscenes before the game had a chance to autosave. On PlayStation 5, a colleague reported some occasional stuttering, screen tearing, and crashing too. And the PC version also has a variety of technical issues relating to in-game presentation, performance, and hardware optimization. And then Matt Miller at Game Informer gave it a 9.3 out of 10 and says, developer Respawn Entertainment clearly took a measured and thoughtful approach to analyze what worked and what didn't in its last Star Wars game. And Jedi Survivor feels like a worthy attempt at evolution. It captures the magic of Star Wars as well as anything in the current canon, and it's a stellar adventure in its own right. Tim Geddes, We, of course, did a review on Gamescast that went up this morning. We talked a lot about our spectrum of opinions on Star Wars Jedi, but I think for the most part, we were all like, no, this is great. Like, this is good. We all like this.
Yeah. And, I mean, nobody disliked it. I feel like you were the lowest on it, and you still... Yeah.
I was still like, no, there's, like, so many good things in this game, and I think the game is good.
I'm definitely on the higher side of this. I absolutely love this game, and I still have a lot to go, and I can't wait to get back to it. This is one of those games, I said this on Gamescast, it reminds me of God of War Ragnarok in the way that when I'm not playing it, I'm like, I need to get back to it. I need to know what happens next, and I really appreciate that that's not just in story and plot beats. It is also in the gameplay, where moment to moment, you're constantly... being pulled into like different gameplay scenarios, whether it's combat or puzzle or it's like parkour, like platforming traversal type stuff. And then sometimes it's a combination of all those things. I just feel like, and then you get the story beats and all of that stuff is so seamlessly integrated together. And it's just a overall super fun game. The technical side of things is a real disappointment. And it's just sad, honestly, at the end of the day that Respawn, put out a game that's this good, and so much of the conversation is going to be mired around the, oh man, same problems the Fallen Order had. Here we are again. And it's that kind of deja vu conversation that I just feel like tarnishes what's otherwise such an amazing experience that I feel like should be such an even bigger win from them. Having said that, these reviews are great.
Yeah. So, I was surprised when I saw the reviews pop and all of them were like, eights and nines. I don't think I saw tens out there, but it was on the higher end, right? And like Metacritic 86 or Metacritic 87, OpenCritic 86 was very impressive for what I thought was going to be a bit more aggressive of a review cycle based on just like bugs and performances and all that stuff. But I think that speaks to what Greg was talking about. Greg, of course, was our lead reviewer when he started off talking about Jedi, right? Like he acknowledged, like, hey, yeah, playing through the game, there's so many, I've seen the bugs, I've seen the crashes, I've seen X, Y, and Z thing in terms of performance that brings it down, but the game is still a 5 out of 5 for Greg. And I think that we're seeing that reflected in the opinions of various reviewers, of the game is so good that we're able to look past a lot of that stuff, right? And I think that's going to shift from person to person. Like, it affected me more than I think it affected other people, but even with that, right, I still look at the game and I'm like, I'm going to finish this game at some point, I think. Yeah, I'm going to come back to it. Right now, I'm taking a little bit of a break because I'm, like, waiting for... We're going to get Zelda someday. At we're some going to get Redfall someday, right? Like, I'm waiting for them. But I'm going to come back...
I can't fucking believe... You're like, I'm going to put Jedi Survivor on pause because I'm waiting for Redfall. You just don't want to play Jedi Survivor.
Oh, my God. He's an Arcane fan. Like,
I'm a big Arcane fan, yeah. And also I'm waiting for the updates. I think updates are going to
extremely
gonna
fair.
Fix this
I'm
thing.
So hopeful. I don't expect it to happen.
I will say, at least for my case, because I feel like it's definitely a case-by-case basis on performance for sure. I rolled the dice last night on our weird scenario of... If we do the Day Zero update, it might completely wipe our saves. Roll the dice. My save's still there. And then I went out into Kobo in the area that I felt like had the worst optimization when it came to frame rate and screen tearing after that update. And it definitely seems more stable for me in that area, especially because to give a quick thing, there will be like kind of random patrols of different factions, and I could tell that the game was struggling the most when you're running around a vast kind of area with different factions either trying to come after you or fighting each other, and you're running away from that, so the game is doing a lot and trying to think of what the hell you're going to do in this scenario, and that's where the game would really struggle performance-wise for me. And it seemed way better last night, where I ran into 3 or 4 different scenarios of enemy factions fighting each other while running away in this like big open area, and it seemed like way more consistent. Still not perfect, but at least a little bit more stable. So hopefully they, over the next coming weeks, after like a day one patch or whatever that looks like, it'll be more stable for the kids out there who play on launch day.
Yeah. I want to shout out a few things in chat. One person mentioned that, like, what happened here? Like, what's going on with Respawn in terms of these games not running? And that was the thing that was a conversation that me and Annie and Barrett were having a little bit after the review. And, like, one thing that Annie brought up that I thought was interesting, that I don't know if this is the case, but it might be just their how they work with Unreal versus other engines. Because one of the things I mentioned in our conversation was, like, yeah, Titanfall 2 wasn't buggy at launch. Titanfall 2 didn't really have problems. And Apex, when I play Apex, that game runs so smooth. And Andy pointed out that both of those are Source, right? And like with Jedi, Respawn is using Unreal Engine. And so I wonder if that is the case. I wonder if it is just the fact that of maybe they're just, they don't have good processes with it, or they don't have a good handle on it. And so, yeah, again, that's just us doing guesswork. That's us being like, I don't know, like, who knows? But then also I saw somebody else in chat be like, oh, but Blessing gave a high score to Pokemon despite his issues. I mentioned this in the Pokemon review, and I also mentioned this in the Jedi review. Firstly, I'm only halfway through Jedi, and so like I throw out a 3 out of 5 as like an in progress. Like, this is me still in the first half of the game. Of course, thoughts and opinions can evolve because we're human. But also I mentioned this in the review of like, if Jedi didn't have these issues, like didn't have the performance stuff, I'd probably give it like a 4 out of 5 for where I'm at right now. And I did the same thing with Pokemon, where like if Pokemon didn't have the issues and performance stuff, I probably would have given that game a 5 out of 5. But with that, I gave it a 4 out of 5. So that's kind of how I balance those two
things.
And
I do say in the review, like, where you're at in the story, that's where I was kind of feeling 10 hours in, where I was more of like a, all right, this is cool, but I wasn't in love with it and thinking it was a great game as I do now. So,
yeah.
Again, I definitely understand the kind of the journey throughout it.
And sure. Hearing you talk about it, Barrett, hearing Greg talk about it, and, like, seeing the reviews as well, I'm now excited to go back and play the rest of the game. Like, you guys have me actually excited to see what else is out there in terms of story and stuff that's going to get me even more excited. But, again, I might wait till we get more updates.
You know, I think me and Fran talked a little bit about reviews yesterday and just critics and you. User reviews and all that stuff, and I think that, again, the point that I kept trying to drive home is how much context matters. And I think that the way we review things, the way we discuss these games, I think it's really important that people understand how you present the stuff of your experience with the technical side. If the quality of the game, the things you like about the game, outshine the technical problems, that's a good sign for the quality of the game itself. But it's a bad sign for the technical side of things. But I feel like it's important that we can have our differing opinions on this, where we're both playing the same game. Let's say we both have the same technical issues. We could still then have an opinion on the rest of the stuff and if the technical issues are worth overlooking because the rest of the game's so high quality. Because at the end of the day, this is the product that we have. Like, what we are playing is this with these technical problems. Like, we hope that they get fixed, but we don't know that they're going to get fixed. So we can only talk about it as we are experiencing it and with what we're being given, and promises we're being told, but we've heard promises many times before. I don't know that this game's ever going to get fixed. So we have to give the caveats of, hey, man, there's a lot of technical problems right now. Yeah. Like, that is a fact.
100%. And I think a lot of it comes down to context and what you and Fran talked about in terms of, look, like, who's reviewing this game, right? Like, I liked Fran mentioning that, you know, for him, what is more important to him is the name and, like, as opposed to the outlet. Like, cool, IGN's reviewing this. Who at IGN is reviewing this, right? Like, what is your opinion? Do I connect with their thoughts? Of course, like, I don't have the time to look up every single reviewer at every single outlet to know who are my people, but I do have time to, like, figure out who are my people specifically in terms of, okay, I like Mitchell Saltzman at IGN. Like, I look at his opinions, and I look at the kind of games he plays and what he looks for in games, and I know that, like, I can trust his word in terms of how it's going to influence mine and, like, me lining up with him.
Yeah, Dan Reichert for me.
Yeah, Dan Reichert also for me as well, right? I look at the video games that Dan Reichert loves, and I'm like, cool, me and him share taste. Mm-hmm. He loves Mario and Metal Gear Solid. I trust this man.
Yeah.
And so, like, you got to find those people for you, right? And I know for me, I found that, like, even recently in terms of talking about games, I bring up combat a lot because, like, combat is a thing that I think I scrutinize more. It's a thing that I care more about in terms of, if I'm getting into combat in a game, I want this shit to be fucking tight and precise. And, like, I'm giving you the context of what I look for in terms of combat. A lot of games don't live up to that, right? And, like, that is going to be different from what maybe Greg Miller looks for, or even what Andy Cortez looks for. And nobody's right, right? Or I guess we're all right. Yeah, we're all just looking for what we're
looking
for.
There's value to that, to people knowing Bless likes combat, Tim likes platforming, and, like, the tightness of it, and how it feels, like, the mobility of a character. That means so much more to me than sometimes the combat stuff and things like
and
that.
I'll say in a lot of games, honestly, and again, this is, I think, where you will see things differ in terms of who we are. Like, I care about gameplay more than story. Like, I care about something like combat more than, like, character interactions, right? And that differs from game to game. In an RPG, I might care more about story. But in an action game that we're playing right here, an action adventure game, in something like God of War and something like Jedi and something like Elden Ring, I am looking for, like, yo, how does it feel when I got my hands on the sticks?
Yeah.
Like, what does that moment to moment look like? And if that stuff is fucking fantastic, I can overlook a bland story. I can overlook like character stuff. Greg Miller is not the same way. Greg Miller is the opposite, right? Greg Miller looks for story. He looks for characters. He looks for being engaged. And of course, he looks for gameplay as well. But again, you got
the balance is different.
The balance is different, and you gotta understand who is talking to you, right? And hopefully, we're doing our best at providing the context of what we look for and who we are.
Yeah, I mean, I care a lot about plot, like the actual plot of a story, which is why things like Breath of the Wild and Elden Ring, story wise, aren't really my bag. Like I'm happy that they exist. I'm in the way that I enjoy plot. There are other people that like story to kind of stay out of their way and to kind of just happen around them, and that's great. We can get both of those things, but knowing that about me and how you see things, like, that's important for kind of shading the conversations we have around all of these games. And I saw people in the chat, someone was saying that that Bethesda and Nintendo get a pass for their technical stuff. They don't. We are constantly talking about the technical problems that they have and the limits that they have, and ever we've been talking shit about that stuff. Mm-hmm. But when the quality of the game shines through so much that you're like, even despite the tech stuff, we still are glowing about this thing. That's where we're at on this. Or it doesn't. If Tears of the Kingdom comes out and the tech stuff is horrible, horrible is not even the way I should go into it. I don't think it's going to be horrible.
If it's
what
and
we
framing,
expect it to be, which is not great, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't expect Tears of the Kingdom to run amazingly, but that's just for a multitude of reasons we already understand. If the gameplay and like the systems and stuff don't back it up, and the experience, the wow factor, that's gonna be a problem. But I expect that they're going to, because it's Nintendo.
1000%. Speaking of Nintendo, story number 4. Nintendo is confirmed for Gamescom. This is Wesley Yinpool at Eurogamer. Nintendo will attend a Gamescom this year, event organizers have announced. It'll be the first time Nintendo has shown up at the German Mega Show since 2019. Nintendo's appearance at Gamescom suggests that it'll have something meaningful to show there. But what? The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom and Pikmin 4 will both have been released by the time Gamescom opens in late August. Could Nintendo have something hardware-related to unveil to the world? And Tim, I had the exact same thought when I saw the tweet go up of Nintendo's coming to Gamescom. All right, you don't have Pikmin, you don't have Zelda. What the fuck are you showing at Gamescom?
What the fuck are you showing? Or are you not showing anything and you just want people to play your games? And
Are you just showing up and you're
like they do at PAX and stuff?
You're bringing Pikmin and Zelda and be like, hey, play more of this.
Yeah,
this is really good, isn't it?
This I first saw this because Jeff Keighley was tweeting about it. Mm-hmm. And not that that means anything, but it does mean he's at least like, hey, you know who else is at Gamescom? Keighley, baby. And guess who has a show that can announce things, right?
We're not seeing anything Nintendo at Keighley's thing opening night live.
Why not?
Like, just because it's not been that show.
That hasn't, but the Game Awards have been, right, in the past. And I feel like, again, there's no rules. Like, at any point, things can change. And yeah, the opening night live has not been that show yet. Clearly, Keighley wants it to be. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't necessarily expect it. What are they going to announce? What is the point of this? Gamescom's a weird one for Nintendo. Very much not their core audience in terms of who they traditionally are trying to speak to, right?
Yeah. I mean, right now there's not a fall game for Nintendo as far as I understand. I forget when the Pokemon DLC comes out.
Oh, yeah, Pokemon DLC is fall and winter.
Okay. But do you think maybe they could just show Pokemon DLC?
No. I think that's a different... I mean, we know what that... It's DLC, right? And I feel like it's going to be treated like DLC. It'll be big DLC, but that's more similar to like Xenoblade, like what just came out yesterday, where like there'll be preview events and there'll be some things, and like I'm gonna be very excited. Like, I can't wait for that stuff, but I don't think that's the big tent pole thing that they'd want to be showing off.
Do you think Metroid Prime 4 could hit?
I mean, that's I don't know. Again, we're in such an interesting place right now with Nintendo and PlayStation, where Xbox has their lineup. We know there's so many Xbox games that are in the pipeline that we're like awaiting. On the Nintendo and PlayStation side, that's just not the case. We have a lot of assumptions, but essentially, once we get past June here, which is just a few months away, we're going to have Metroid Prime 4 and Spider-Man 2 and Wolverine. And those are the only known quantities.
Yeah.
And
don't forget Last of Us multiplayer. Yeah. How dare you?
But besides that, that leaves a lot of studios open of what are they working on the PlayStation and Nintendo side. I mean, we do have the PlayStation event coming in May, but I expect that is going to blow us the fuck away.
Yeah. Theoretically in May.
Yeah, theoretically in May. Maybe in June, live at the Shrine Auditorium in front of 7,000 screaming fans. But either way, I expect we're going to get a PlayStation showcase in May, and I expect that it is going to like knock our fucking socks off.
I hope so, man.
And I think that we are going to have a similar amount of future titles to look forward to that we do on Xbox right now in terms of the pipeline.
Right now, I have a running bet with Roger McCorney. Roger is convinced that we're going to see new Nintendo hardware release in 2023, and I told him, no way. And when I saw the Gamescom thing, I was like, oh, man, I might have spoke too soon, because that bet was yesterday.
Please tell me you bet, like, $200 or $300 on this.
No, it was a pizza bet. But
that's an easy couple hundred dollars for you, Bliss.
It sounds like he wants some expensive pizza, and so I might go for some expensive pizza as well. Yeah. You know?
No, you're going to get that expensive pizza. I might get some deep dish. There's no shot that Nintendo comes out with new hardware. There's no shot that it would be Gamescom that they would announce that new hardware.
I want some deep dish, you know?
Mr. Ponton once says, there goes Tim setting his expectations too high again. Have you seen a PlayStation showcase? You can't set expectations higher than a PlayStation showcase. They fucking deliver. Every single time, they have delivered some of the best showcases we have ever seen in video
games. Was the last one the one where we got Spider-Man 2 and Wolverine?
And Wolverine. And, like, the other one had Ratchet and, like, dude.
The one weird misstep God War was Ragnarok. 2019. The one weird, and that was the one where it was like the weird Last of Us church and stuff like that.
That wasn't a showcase.
That's like
a PlayStation showcase.
Because we're
what
talking
was
about
that then.
We're talking
that was
about
the E3.
Yeah, that was just like that was an E3 showcase. So like we're separating it from like the modern ones.
Yeah,
where it's like all digital or whatever.
PS5. Once they started showing all that cool branding of like all of the sacred symbols, like using the cool transitions for everything, then there was like the moment that we're like, are these real people or is it CG?
The first time they did that was a GDC, and that was like the weird like introduction of the PS5 where they were talking about all like the technical aspects of it. It was like Mark Cerny and him talking about like, oh yeah, and like him being like, it's backwards compatible. You only saw the PS4 logo, and there was a lot of space for other things. People were like, what the fuck is going on with that? That one was a weird one. But yeah, like the showcases were like, I would say starting from June 2020, and then the one
the PS5 reveal. Following. Yeah, the one where reveal. We first saw the console itself. Like,
okay, yeah.
All
yes,
of those
yes,
showcases
yes, yes.
are just fucking, like, legitimately unmatched. Like, the only things that you can compare them to are some of the greatest Nintendo Directs ever, or PlayStation's greatest E3 conferences. Like,
I agree with that.
Where when it announced, like, with the God of War Symphony and all that shit. Like, we're going to be having some bangers ahead. And then there's the Nintendo side. Like, we are due a Nintendo Direct that answers a lot of, where's Mario? Where's my boy? He's having the best year of his life right now. But where's he at on the video game side of things?
I got so many questions in regards to Nintendo, but the answers to those questions are so far away. Do you know what's near, Tim? Story number 5,
oh,
right here,
shit.
It's right now.
Yeah,
story number 5.
On my toes here.
Yeah, no. Bethesda has revealed some limited edition Redfall Xbox controllers. This was tweeted out by Bethesda this morning, where they said, calling all vampire slayers, take back the island of Redfall with a limited edition custom Xbox Design Lab wireless Xbox controllers. Make it yours now and slay in style when Redfall drops on May 2nd. Still keeping that May 2nd date, huh? All right.
May 2nd, man. Weird.
It's too late to
literal
change the place.
Days away.
All right. You know what I mean? Like, Star Wars Jedi Survivor is getting some real good reviews. That's all I'm saying. Get out the way. Zelda's coming. All right. Zelda's coming to town.
Link on the highway.
Get out the way. Redfall. There's still time. There's not time. But these look cool.
Yeah.
Like some real cool designs. And also, cool thing about this one is you can actually buy them.
I'm not going to say These do not look cool.
I like the red one. Like the red one with the teeth.
I don't like over design controllers.
That's like Gears of War 2008 vibes right there.
Yeah.
You're telling me those aren't cool vibes?
I got to bring some honesty to this table.
This podcast?
Right here.
Yeah.
I like the red one. The other ones, I'm like, those are cool. But like the red one, I like a lot. I just like black and red. I like those colors.
I like blue and white and black and gray.
You can get these right now. These aren't like the ones where we show you a controller and it's like, oh yeah, you have to win a sweepstick or something. You can go and get those in Xbox Design Labs. And so if you have taste, boom, there you go. Story number 6. Speaking of having taste, a Totally Spies game just got announced. This comes from Microids on Twitter, where they tweeted out, they put a lipstick emoji, and then they say, Sam, Clover, and Alex have a new mission. Microids is partnering with Bonnie J. Kids and Family for a new video game based on the animated series Totally Spies, scheduled for a 2024 release on consoles and PC.
What world are we living in?
Let's go.
This is hilarious. Totally Spies, a super niche cartoon from the early 2000s that I was obsessed with.
I love Totally Spies.
It's fucking awesome. And they announced yesterday a season 7 is coming out in 2024, and now we're getting a video game. Hell yeah. I hope this is a major success. It won't be, but I hope that it is.
Coming 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's starting development like right now?
Like, literally, somebody today learned they're making a total spies game.
Yeah. Like, you want me to put it out when? All right, cool. We'll see. Like, my dream scenario would be that this game is very similar to, what was the Samurai Jack game that we played? That was like, it was kind of double A, but it was still cool and like had some merit to it. I hope that this can be that. I doubt it.
Vibes of this screenshot here, and maybe it's just like a blurry image of like the new season 7 promo, but it's got like a little bit of that like
pixelation,
pixely kind of thing. Like, I almost want a Shredder's Revenge type of game.
That'd be fun. Yeah. Like a 2D beat 'em up type situation.
Yeah, you know, I want them to make this game.
Yeah. I'm going to do some research right now, right here, because I want to know more about Microids.
Yeah.
Corey Cudney says, I want a 7 out of 10 game, and I'm proud of it.
I agree.
I would love a 7 out of 10.
That Samurai Jack game was like one of the coolest 7 out of 10 games that we played.
1,000%. All right, I'm going to their link tree for Microids. Let's go to their website. Let's see what's on their website. First of all, is Microids even the developer or the publisher? I don't even know. Apparently, they did UFO Robot Grendizer, The Feast of Wolves, which I believe is like a huge... I know that the Grendizer IP is big, right? Or am I confusing that with something else?
I have no idea.
I go to the website. The first thing I see is Tintin, Cigars of the Pharaoh.
Oh, Lucy James loves Tintin.
Tintin's a classic.
Oh, did they work with Sifu? Hold on. The retail editions of Sifu for Xbox One and Series X will be available...
Bless.
What up?
Can you imagine?
Sifu totally
spies.
Can you
fucking imagine?
Totally speed.
That would be fucking awesome.
So they've done work with Front Mission First Remake, which is huge. Metal Mutation, Scrap Riders. So they're like a pub. They do like
going through hallways, beating the shit out of people, switching between the three ladies. Fuck yeah.
All right, I got no frame of reference for what Micros is up to. Barrett has up this timeline on their website. Who's Nikki Boom?
I do not like that.
Micros Distribution.
I've never heard of any of these games.
Yeah, I've not heard of any of these.
No.
But yeah, it seems like they just partner with developers to get games made and distributed. So good on you, Microid. Don't fuck this up.
Don't fuck it up.
Don't fuck it up, please, for us. We need this. Tim. That Totally Spies game that we need is just so far away. Mm-hmm. If I want to know what's coming out to mom and grop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Desta, The Memories Between for Switch and PC, The Centennial Case, A Shijima Story for iOS and Android, Cassette Beasts for PC, Honkai Star Rail for mobile and PC. That's the new game from the Genshin devs. Gran Turismo 7's 1.32 update rolls out today, bringing with it 4 new cars, new scapes, sure, new GT cafe menus. All right, cool. And then Quantum Break is back on digital platforms for Xbox and Xbox Game Pass. If you remember, it got taken down because of licensing stuff, but it's back now if you feel like playing some Quantum Break. New dates for you. We got one new date this Friday, Take to the Mountains and Grand Mountain Adventure Plus on Apple Arcade. Deal of the day for you. May's PlayStation Plus games have been revealed. In May, you're going to get Grid Legends for PS5 and PS4, Chivalry 2 for PS5 and PS4, and Descenders for PS5 and PS4. Now it's time for reader mail. That's where you write in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD to get your questions read on the show. We got just one for you. This comes from New AJ's Eyes. New AJ writes in and says, a short story for Blessing Adeoye Jr. So Bless famously said he would pay $24,000 plus a third mortgage on his house for Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. I don't think I went that far. Well, yesterday I donated blood and used the money I received for doing so to pre-order Tears of the Kingdom, only to come to the realization that I literally just paid in blood to get Tears of the Kingdom. Thank you guys for all you do, and I hope my story helps Bless feel more justified in his statements. Oh, yeah, I guess I need a question, too. What's the most underrated cereal? Lots of love. New AJ from London.
There's so many frozen bricks of blood. This is wild.
He paid in blood for Tears of the Kingdom, and y'all made fun of me.
I respect it, man. I get it.
Also, you don't need to write in with a question. You can just write in with your statement. But also, most underrated cereal, I'm going Cap'n Crunch.
Most underrated, I'm just going to go Pops.
Kicks.
Oh, like Corn Pops?
Kicks, yeah.
Oh, Fuck, I might be with you actually. Corn Pops is really good.
And it's like you think that it's one of the boring ones, but no, there's some fun there.
Yeah, this is like some real good flavor in Corn Pops.
Yeah, it's fun to be had.
I agree. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong, where you write in, let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong, so we can correct it for those watching later on YouTube and listening later on podcast services around the globe. So somebody wrote it with a story about how they dreamt about being on Cape City and got a ton of stuff wrong. I was telling Joey and Roger that like earlier in the week, I was thinking about how I never have work dreams. I have two very recurring dreams. I have school dreams where I'm at school, back at school, and I'm failing or whatever, and I'm also naked for some reason. And then I also have a recurring dream about Mario 64, where I'm like in Peach's castle and like I'm just weird shit starts happening in Mario 64. Those are my two recurring dreams, but I never have work dreams. Literally, the day after I had that thought, I had a dream that I was at work and I was reviewing Jedi Survivor.
Wow.
And then I woke up and I was like, damn it, I gotta do it again. Like, yeah. I gotta go back to work and review Jedi Survivor again. Yeah. And I nailed it in the dream. In the dream, I bodied that review. Yeah. Like, I articulated all my thoughts so perfectly. And I woke up and I was like, God damn it. Like,
damn it, I still can't play Redfall.
Yeah, I still can't play Redfall, dude. I can't wait for Redfall. But yeah, it was Anthony Kelly, yep, that wrote in with that. That just derailed me. So, appreciate it. That's editorializing. Okay. Oh, here's a good one. Nano says the Samurai Jack game was Samurai Jack Battle Through Time.
There we go.
And that's it for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. Tomorrow's hosts for the show are going to be me and the one and only, Austin Creed. I never know whether to call him Xavier Austin.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Okay, cool.
He's WWE superstar Xavier Woods, but in our hearts, it's Austin Creed.
Austin Creed. So tune in for that. If you're watching this live, remember, we're trying something new here with YouTube Super Chats on Kind of Funny Games Daily. Only on YouTube and the live stream, there's going to be a 30-minute post show where Mike comes in to talk to us KFGD hosts about your Super Chat questions. Stay tuned to after today's handshake to hang out with us before the next Kind of Funny stream starts. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday live right here on YouTube.com/KindofFunnyGames and Twitch.tv/KindofFunnyGames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. Until next time, Game Daily.